But, verse 19, Jews from Antioch came from Antioch and Iconium, and having won over the crowds, they stoned Paul and dragged him out of the city, supposing him to be dead. But while the disciples stood around him, he got up and entered the city. The next day, he went away with Barnabas to Derbe. After they had preached the gospel to that city and had made many disciples, they returned to Lystra and to Iconium and to Antioch, strengthening the souls of the disciples, encouraging them to continue in the faith and saying, through many tribulations, we must enter the kingdom of God. When they had appointed elders for them in every church, having prayed with fasting, I hope some of you have been doing fasting during Lent. If you haven't joined in, there's still an opportunity for 4 weeks or so to join in. We're fasting for one day each week. When they had appointed elders for them in every church, having prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord in whom they had believed. They passed through Pisidia and came into Pamphylia. When they had spoken the word in Perga, they went down to Attalia. From there they sailed to Antioch, from which they had been commended to the grace of God for the work that they had accomplished. When they had arrived and gathered the church together, they began to report all things that God had done with them and how he had opened a door of faith to the Gentiles. And they spent a long time with the disciples. This is the word of the Lord. So chapters 13 and 14 in Acts are the total description of Paul's first missionary journey. So a few weeks back we looked at the opening part of Acts 13 where they had a prayer time, and as a result of prayer and fasting they sent Paul and Barnabas out on the world's first organized, if you like, missionary journey. And here, at the end of this reading, we're told they came back to the place where they started from, which is in Syria today, and they reported how they had got on. So here's a summary of what they could have said. We had a fabulous, fabulous time. We went to Cyprus and we got off there and we went through the whole island from one end to the other. We planted churches as we went along, and would you believe it, the governor of the whole island, a Roman leader, he became a Christian too. And we defeated the evil one, sending away a magician who thought he could, you know, interfere with God's work, but no, he couldn't. And it was just wonderful. From there, we got a boat and we went into southern Turkey and we went up into the inland areas, and we preached the gospel to a number of towns there, and we planted a church in every single town. And then we came back, and here we are again, 2 years after we set off. Wow, everybody said. The church has been planted throughout Cyprus. I believe that some people here are going to Cyprus soon, and you could go, oh no, not here, but they were here this morning, are going to Cyprus soon, and you can see the places where Paul went. There were monuments to him there. The whole island they ministered to, and then up into southern Turkey and found in a large number of churches where there were none before. So all of a sudden, this Christian faith, which was in Judea and Samaria, is now beginning in all sorts of other places. Fabulous, fabulous time. Hallelujah, praise the Lord, they would have all said. How's your ministry? If you were given a report to the church on your ministry, what would you be saying? And would it be as successful as Paul's? There is no doubt that this is an astonishing successful ministry. I am presuming that we are all familiar with 1 Corinthians chapter 12. You're ticking away now, aren't you? 1 Corinthians chapter 12. What is 1 Corinthians chapter 12? 1 Corinthians chapter 12 is where Paul talks about the body and how a church is a body, how we are all individually parts of the body, and none of us should say about ourselves to somebody else, well, I wish I was Bob. Bob is Bob, and I am me. And God has made us different, but we are both members of the body, and we both have ministry to do. How foolish to say, I don't want that part of the body, says the apostle. As if you could cut off your hand and be equally as functional. You wouldn't be. You would be less. The whole point of that whole description in 1 Corinthians chapter 12 is that each of us, whoever we are, has a ministry from God. Just as much as Paul and Barnabas were sent out at the start of chapter 13 to go and be these first missionaries, so God has given you a ministry if you are part of the body. It's not that you should imitate Paul as a missionary, but it is that if you were given your report of your ministry, it should be as successful as Paul's. Would it be? So obviously, if you're sitting there thinking, I don't know what my ministry is and I'm not doing anything, then you need to make an appointment with the rector and have a chat about what your ministry in the body is. Because if you're not doing it, says the apostle in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, the body is weaker if you are not doing your ministry within it. It's not just a personal thing, as if you can go home and say, it doesn't matter. It does. If any single one of us is not doing the ministry that God has given to us to do, then the whole body is weaker. So, from this reading this evening, what are the four principles that underlay Paul and Barnabas's first missionary journey that should underlay ours? Because if we're not having these four things, we will not be standing in front of the church reporting successful ministry. Number one, it's sheer hard work. That's something that's a bit lost on us because of the names of these places, which mean almost nothing, and a lack of understanding of what life is like in the first century AD. So you've just heard me say they were away for 2 years. They left Antioch in Syria, and they returned 2 years later. In that time, Paul and Barnabas had sailed 530 miles. What?
553.
I had to ask him because it was in kilometres in the book I was studying, and I couldn't work out so quickly how many miles that is. They sailed 553 miles, not in an ocean going liner of today whizzing around the eastern Mediterranean, but in a very small boat in dangerous waters. They walked 900 miles, and a lot of it was uphill. A Scotsman friend of mine, I do have friends who are Scots, a Scotsman friend of mine was talking about doing the Munros in Scotland, that's mountains over 3,000 feet, but he was going with his wife, who was Canadian, to Canada, where the mountains are 13,000 feet and more, and so he was apologising to those he was writing to for daring to suggest that a Munro was a mountain at all. But Paul was starting from the coast with Barnabas and walking thousands of feet up into the middle of current-day Turkey, and not on asphalt roads and paths. Actually, simply to do the travelling that he did is an astonishing thing. If you have your own Bibles with you, which I will say to my dying day, and you looked at 2 Corinthians chapter 12, chapter 11, this is Paul talking about his journeying. So 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 25. 3 times I was beaten with rods, once I was stoned. That's in this first missionary journey, we just read it. 3 times I was shipwrecked, 3 times. I don't think I'd have got back on a boat after one. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I have spent in the deep. I have been on frequent journeys, in dangers from rivers. What if it's wintertime and the rivers are pouring down from the heights of central Turkey? Dangers from robbers. We forget that most of the world is in darkness. There are a few big cities, there's only 3 really in the whole of the Roman Empire. One of those is in Egypt, and one of those is in Turkey, but not in the bit that is going around at this point, and the other one's in Italy. After that, it's mammothly dark. I am in danger from robbers. And I am in danger from my countrymen, danger from the Gentiles, danger in the city, danger in the wilderness, danger on the sea. The fact that Paul and Barnabas walked across the island of Cyprus and up from the coast into inland Turkey is actually stating a hugely dangerous and difficult thing. It was sheer hard work to do a missionary journey. Sheer hard work. And actually, whatever ministry we might think we're in, it's sheer hard work. And the sheer hard work puts a lot of people off because they haven't got the time, or they haven't got the energy. But actually, any successful ministry of any sort requires sheer hard work. If you're a Sunday school teacher, and it's week by week, that's a week by week prayer and preparation in order to communicate the gospel to children. If you're in a music ministry, unless you're somebody who's fabulously good, that requires preparation and practice. We're going to sing in a little bit of worship time after this sermon in 3 songs. The one in the middle is a new song, which I've asked that we could sing. And so we're doing it this evening, and we're going to do it Sunday morning next week. It's a wonderful hymn about the holiness of Jesus, that he is above all other things, but we've got to learn it. Well, you know, we can just stand there and say miserably, I don't know this song, why are we singing it? Or we could learn it and get into it. But actually, the musicians had to learn it and practice it so that they could lead us today. Surprising though it may seem, to preach a sermon is hard physical work. Most of the time, if preaching has gone well, it's exhausting and draining. Whatever ministry we may happen to be in, it is hard work. And Paul and Barnabas were successful because they were prepared to actually do the hard work. So it's not that far, if you just turn back to Acts 14, verse 1. In Iconium, they've been in Antioch in Pisidia, that's in Turkey, as opposed to Antioch in Syria. And they go from there to Iconium. That's not very far, maybe about one day's walk. But Iconium in verse 1 to Derbe in verse 6 is 120 miles. They didn't walk that in a day. So there's effort involved in doing the ministry. That's number one. And you will never be able to stand up and say, my ministry is successful as Paul's, if you are not prepared to put the hard work in that Paul and Barnabas put in. Number two, they let nothing put them off their ministry. They persisted through thick and thin. God had called them to a particular ministry, and come what may, they were going to do it. So this is the incident where Paul is stoned at Iconium. It's a puzzling sentence or two, isn't it? Verse 19, notice that Jews came from Antioch and Iconium, and having won over the crowds, they stoned Paul. This is at Lystra. And dragged him out of the city, supposing him to be dead. So the Jews have stoned him. He's presumably lying there unconscious or something or the other on the ground. We will all talk to doctors, younger and older, in the congregation. What's going on here? This guy is stoned, and they think he's dead. And so they drag him out. But while the disciples stood around him, verse 20, they don't appear to do anything. He got up and... well, it entered the city. How bizarre is that? Would you go back into the city? You would have thought they would take him away somewhere, but perhaps there's nothing outside the city. It's just darkness and mountains and who knows what. Robbers. They let nothing stop them doing their ministry. A little bit earlier, you have the weirdness that they were going to be crowned as gods. So in this few verses, we didn't read the middle verses, but in these few verses, Paul and Barnabas have done exactly what Kipling writes in If. We could all now sit here and say, can we recite If? Supposedly the nation's favourite poem. If you can meet with triumph and disaster, and treat those two impostors just the same. And here in Lystra, Paul and Barnabas meet with triumph. They are going to be garlanded. They're going to be garlanded because they've done a miracle on a man who is paralyzed. And the whole city is thinking, who are these people? They're the gods and they've come down to us. But then these other people come and stir everybody up, and now he's stoned. So in the one place he's going to be hailed as a kind of Messiah and stoned to death. If you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same. And Paul and Barnabas are not mislaid by the triumph, because they run about saying, stop it, stop it. Don't offer sacrifices to us. We are merely men, just like you. But neither did he let the stoning stop him carrying on and preaching the gospel, because that was the ministry that God had called him to. Notice in verses 6 and 7 at the earlier part of the reading, and that this has happened in the previous place. This is what had happened in Iconium. So in verse 4, the people of the city were divided. Some sided with the Jews, some sided with the apostles. When an attempt was made by both the Gentiles and the Jews to mistreat and to stone them, but they don't actually do it, they flee. But it's the next sentence that's amazing. Verse 7. And they continued to preach the gospel. Staggering. They have just fled from one city where people were going to stone them, but they don't give up. They carry on doing the ministry that God has called them to do. So number two, number one was, are you ready for hard work? Number two is, they persisted. They did not let anything, either good or evil, stop them doing the ministry God had called them to. Number three, they had a strategy for fulfilling the ministry. Again, I think it's really amazing that Paul and Barnabas do a kind of semicircular walk up there in the Turkey, in the southern bit, but inland. And they go all the way to Derbe. And in verse 21, we read, after they had preached the gospel to that city and had made many disciples, they returned. They did a turnaround and went back to each of the cities that they'd been in, to Lystra, to Iconium, and to Antioch. And what were they doing? Verse 22, strengthening the souls of the disciples, encouraging them to continue in the faith, appointing elders to them, praying and fasting with them, and commending them to the Lord. In other words, here is a missionary who doesn't think, okay, I've stood in the marketplace and preached the gospel and this man and this woman have responded, I've done my job, and wander off to the next town. What they registered is that they needed more than that. These people not only needed to hear the gospel, but something had to happen to establish them in the faith, and some sort of structure needed to exist to keep them going. There was an appointing of elders in every city. So that is a strategy. That's actually sitting down and thinking, how are we going to plant a church and how is it going to be successful and continue? And the answer is not a whiz tour through where you just do something dramatic like heal somebody or whatever it is, preach a such a powerful sermon that many believed and then go off. They turned around and went back through every single one. So if we're thinking about the 2 years, that's probably 1 year out and 1 year back, making sure that these people who have just become Christians, so if you've just become a Christian at the start in Antioch in Pisidia, a year or more later, Paul is coming back. That's quite a long gap in order to establish and strengthen the church. That's a strategy. The idea that you can do any ministry without thinking about it is foolish. Oh, well, let's just, you know, start. The apostles clearly gave some thought to what they were doing. And any ministry, whatever it is that we may be involved in, requires thinking about it. God gave us our minds, and we are meant to think about what he has called us to. So number one, if you want to stand up and give a report about the success of the ministry that God has given you, you have to be ready for hard work. Number two, you have to be ready to let nothing detract you from the ministry God has given you. And number three, you better do some thinking about it. What is involved in making this fruitful? And number four, you also need a bit of common sense. Throughout this chapter 14, there is something that never happens. And that is, it is never the case that everybody responds positively. Never. Notice that over and over again, some believe and some don't. So in verse 2 at Iconium, the Jews who disbelieved stirred up the minds of the Gentiles and embittered them against the brethren. Verse 4, the people of the city were divided. Some sided with the Jews and some with the apostles. Then in at Lystra, Jews come over from Antioch and Iconium, and having won over the crowds, they stone Paul and drag him out of the city. But disciples stood around him. They are those who have listened and responded to the gospel. And in each place, that's what happened. Some of us are a bit silly. I put myself in this category, because we are always praying that everybody would be converted. We're always praying that it would be so wonderful that, you know, the world has changed. 10,000 people in Buckhurst Hill become converted. Would that not be staggering? I mean, in world terms, what is that? That's nothing, is it? 10,000 people. But actually, we need a bit of common sense about our ministry. Some children in a Sunday school class are going to be pains in the neck week after week after week and would apparently pay not the slightest attention to your prayers and your preparation and whatever you may be doing for them. But some will, but not all of them. And we can either get ourselves depressed by thinking, what about X? When actually, as far as the example of Paul and Barnabas are concerned, there are churches set up, but not everybody in the town or village or city becomes converted. So we just need a bit of common sense, because some people get deflated when their expectations aren't fulfilled. So I had an opportunity when I was visiting missionaries in Oman. I was talking with an American guy, and it was just him and me in his vehicle, driving over the sand and something or the other. And I asked him how he was getting on, and there was a kind of pause, because in a way, he was, although we were in the same mission organization, he was an American, supported by American churches, and I was there as an English person looking at the English missionaries, but in a way, they were working in the same place, and I was in the car with him. And I said, how are you getting on? He said, well, I've been here 8 years, and then there was a pause, and he said, I'm leaving this summer. I said, oh, why are you leaving this summer? And his answer was, because nobody had yet been converted. But this is in a deeply Muslim country. This is in an area where it takes 10 years to be fluent in the language, and he's only been there for 8. And it must be dispiriting to give up your home in the States and to go over to the Middle East, I'm sure. But I wondered whether he had some common sense about the reality of the situation he was in. No, I don't know him, and maybe it was right for him to go home. I'm just using it as an example. That we do need to be, in a sense, realistic, along with depending and believing on the Lord that he can do anything. But it is actually the rate of attrition in the missionary world is high. What I mean by that is that lots of people go out, but quite a lot come back. There was an interesting book written just a year or two back, which I haven't read. I don't even think I bought it, but anyway, it sounded interesting because, of course, we all read about, the Mayflower, which are, that is, those people from this country who were really keen on the Lord and wanting to worship him faithfully and truly without being contaminated by Anglicanism in this country. And so, of course, they go off to America to find God's own nation. And you will find memorials and everything to the Mayflower. But a book was written about those that went and returned, because it wasn't what they were expecting it to be. So just from this, I don't want us to be, you know, those kind of people who think, whoa, it's all going to be hunky-dory and everybody will respond to the gospel. Not everybody will respond to the gospel. But the point is, if we've got some sanctified common sense, that won't put us off the ministry that God has called us to do. So I don't know what the ministry is that God has called you to do. I do know that whoever we are, there is a ministry for us to do. And I believe that here at the end of this 2 years, when Paul returns to the church that sent him out and gives a report, they began, verse 27, they arrived and gathered the church together and began to report all things that God had done with them and how he opened a door of faith to the Gentiles. It's an astonishingly successful ministry. But the four principles behind it are hard work. Not being put off by anything, having a strategy thought through, and some common sense. Thanks be to God for his word. Amen.